Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I tell stories about things that worked, but also some of those big epic fails that I've made along the way, because ultimately, I truly believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And one of the things that I love to do is talk to experts. That's part of how I grow on this learning journey as well. And today I have an expert with me, Crystal Frommert. She has over 24 years of experience as an educator. Crystal has taught math in public, parochial, and international schools. Beyond teaching, she has served as an instructional coach, school board member, adjunct college instructor, technology coordinator, and deputy head of secondary. She is the author of the 2023 book, When Calling Parents Isn't Your Calling, A Teacher's Guide to Communicating with Parents, and is a frequent contributor to Edutopia. Crystal is currently a middle school math teacher and an administrator in Houston, Texas, where she lives with her husband, daughter, and dog. And she's going to be talking about this idea of having a strengths-based perspective around parental involvement. And I am really excited. I really enjoy the book that she wrote. It's a phenomenal, practical read. And so without further ado, here is our guest, Crystal Frommert. We have here Crystal Frommert, and she's going to be talking about this idea of parental community engagement, engaging with families, connecting with them. And I am really excited about this topic. Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I'm Crystal Frommert. I live in Houston. I work at an international school with representing families from about 60 different countries and 50 or so different languages. It's a wonderful place to work. I am also the author of the book, When Calling Parents Isn't Your Calling, A Teacher's Guide to Communicating with Parents. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that in my 23rd or so year of teaching. Uh-huh. And I wrote that book because that is an area where I was not confident when I was a new teacher in the early 2000s. And I have grown so much in that area, and I've learned from really great teachers and administrators. So I put all that I know into that book. Of course, there's more to know. But so I'm really excited to be an author of a book. I'm more excited to be a teacher. That's my true love. I'm also serving as an administrator. I don't love that as much, to be honest. But
yeah,
I love being in the classroom.
Yeah. So you mentioned the years that you've had with experience. How has parental engagement changed for you over that time?
That's funny because when I started teaching, I was in a rural town in Texas mm-hmm. where email was not common. I mean, of course, we had the internet, but we're new to it, didn't really know much to do with it. And I had one parent, I was teaching fifth grade and had one parent in the whole class who had an email address. And I remember thinking, what do I do with this? Why would I have his email address? That doesn't make sense, because you just called or you met with them. That's what you did. And so now, fast forward, you know, from all those years ago, now I can't even imagine not having an email address. Like, it's such quick communication with families, and they can ask me questions. I can reach out to them. In fact, I never make a phone call unless I've emailed first. I just don't like to do cold calls because I don't like cold calls myself. Very much believe in phone calls, but I always email first. But that's a huge change. It's just how quick that we can communicate with families. And I think that there's pros and cons to that technology that's happened over the decades.
You know, one of the things that's interesting as you talk about that is the changes in technology. In your book, you mentioned, you know, going beyond the newsletter and really leveraging the different tools that are out there. What advice would you have specifically for new teachers who are getting started? So I work with pre-service teachers as a professor, have a book coming out connected to new teachers. So, you know, as we think about this idea of parental family communication, how can you go beyond just sending out that newsletter?
Yeah, maybe I'm a little bit old school, but I've have not gotten into texting and using these texting apps to communicate with families. But I know that many teachers are. In fact, I'm a parent. I have a 16-year-old daughter. She is on a basketball team for her high school, and there's an app that they use to communicate with the players and with parents. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I can't even imagine how that would work without that app. It's just great. I get communication from the coaches. She gets communication on which jersey to wear, all the different things. So I think that if your school is going to bring in an app for communication, I think that's wonderful. I think it's increasing communication, but don't let it get in the way of authentic conversations.
Yeah.
So for example, if there's a sensitive conversation that needs to be had, I wouldn't expect that to come across on the basketball app, right? That would be insensitive and not appropriate. Yeah. So just know when you're using technology to communicate, use the right technology for the right message. If you've got anything sensitive or hard to say, that needs to be face-to-face or a phone call, but even face-to-face is better.
You know, you mentioned in sharing your story that you work in an international school, a broad cultural diversity, parents coming with different expectations. And then I think about that as well as parents in general having different expectations with communication. I err on the side of I like under communication. I like short, quick emails. I don't like the long. But I also know, you know, from being a teacher that short could come across as rude, right, to some parents, and that some parents wanted to know everything. And so when you think about the different expectations around communication that parents have, so shorter, longer communication, being more direct, less direct, some of that's cultural, right?
Yeah.
Cultural expectations of the role of a parent, the role of a teacher, the role of homework, all these different things that play into it. And then you've got 30 of them and at the elementary level and 180 at the secondary level. So what advice would you give to teachers about navigating those expectations around communication?
Yeah, I would say, you know, when you get an email from a parent that seems a little like a snarky tone, we've all gotten them. Mm-hmm. And at my particular school, I mean, any school that has an international population, which is most schools, I got an email that just had this tone that I was not comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And I thought, where is this coming from? So I decided just to pick up the phone. This was years ago, but I decided to pick up the phone and call this parent. And she had an accent that was different than mine. It was not an American accent like mine. And so I could tell that English was not her first language. Mm-hmm. And she spoke so kindly to me. And I thought, oh, that must be it. She's writing in a language that is not her first language, which therefore could have this perception of a snarky tone, right? I'm sure if I were to write in a second language or a third language, it would come across probably very curt, and because I don't know the nuances of the language. And so I think that was a turning point for me as a teacher, to not to assume tone in an email. And especially if English is not their first language, or whatever language that you're conducting your classes is not their first language, just have that grace of like, you know what, I'm going to pick up the phone and just maybe find out what's going on deeper here. I also find even if English is their first language and you still get a snarky tone, if you pick up the phone, it disarms them a little bit. They're like, oh, you called me. I think one time I actually just named it. I just called it out and I said, I sensed a tone in your email and I just wanted to follow up and see if you had a concern. And she's like, oh, no, I don't have it. You know, and so I would, you know, just letting her know that's what I sensed in your email. And I just wanted to see if everything's all right. How can we smooth this out? It just was so much better on the phone when we could hear each other's voice.
It's also interesting how some, you know, there's the cultural element too. I think about, you know, places where I've done some speaking and keynotes and workshops. And in the Netherlands, it's just it's a cultural element to be very direct. I still think one of my memories was someone asked me if I liked the TV show Breaking Bad. And I said, well, it's not my favorite. And he said, I didn't ask you if it's your favorite. I asked you if you like it. And it's very it's very direct. And then I think about, you know, in our university, we had a partnership with China. And in China, there's a lot more talking around things, right? There's a lot more respectful silence, talking around things, not necessarily going direct. And so I even think about it feels like teachers kind of have to be a student of their students' culture and kind of learning those elements too, I imagine.
Yeah. I work at a school that's French and we're international and we're a French school as well in the same school. So about 30% of our faculty are French or come from French speaking countries. And there is, I'm not generalizing about my colleagues, but there is a more direct tone, especially when they're writing, especially when they're writing comments on our report cards, you know, the narratives. So I'm in the process right now of writing those because it's the end of our school year. And as an American, I'm an American raised person. I do the compliment sandwich. I say something very nice, and then I have a critique, and then I end with something very nice. And I asked one of my French colleagues years ago, I said, "Do you do the compliment sandwich?" She's like, "That is not a thing I understand at all. What are you talking about?" She's like, "No, we just say it. We just say it how it is." And then she added that Americans are too kind to be honest, and the French are too honest to be kind. So of course, I'm generalizing. I know so many kind French people.
Absolutely.
I know so many unkind Americans. So I don't mean to generalize, but yes, in the way that you are speaking. But also, I think when you're on the phone, going back to that, when you're on the phone, you can negotiate those two cultures. Mm-hmm. I talked actually today on the phone to a parent who's British. And I'm sure he can hear my accent. I can hear his accent. I have, you know, a little bit of understanding about his family. We're going to meet in the middle and with how we're communicating. And he knows how I communicate as a teacher. I know how he communicates as a parent. And that's just that push and pull that we have. And it makes for a very nice partnership.
You know, it's interesting in thinking about the role of parents, that whole idea of partnerships, right? One of the things I am noticing right now that I actually think is kind of heartbreaking is on social media, I definitely see this in teacher TikTok, for example, big time. There's this sort of negative feedback loop connected to parents. So there's these teacher comedians that mock parents. There's these skits that mock parents. There's these complaints about parents. And I know that parents can be a challenge. I don't want to deny that there are challenges, but how do you get past the mindset of parents are the enemy into that mindset of parents are a partner?
Right. I'm so glad you asked that because part of the book is, and this is something I had to learn over the years, is you don't know someone's background. You don't know where they're coming from. You don't know their story. And just don't assume. I mean, I'll tell you a short story. That it was a lesson that I learned. It was parent conferences, and we used to schedule them in person. Now they're on Zoom, but we scheduled them in person, and it was a very tight day. I mean, it was like 10 minutes, bell rings, you leave, next parent, right? And if you miss your appointment, which was only 10 minutes, if you miss it, there's no other time slot I have for you. Mm-hmm. So there was a family who just didn't show up. No phone call, no email, nothing. They didn't show up for their 10-minute time slot. I was annoyed because I was like, what does this mean? Do I have to stay late? Well, 5:00, the end of the day, here they come walking down the hall. Mm-hmm. And I'm smiling on the outside, but inside I am annoyed. Like, you stood me up today. And I could make up all kinds of stories in my head about what you did. The mom says, "I am so sorry we couldn't come earlier today. We found this dog," and you'll appreciate the story because you're a dog person too.
Yeah, yeah.
"We found this dog and they were hurt, and we took it to the vet and we just had to take care of it. He's fine now, but I am so sorry we missed. Is there any chance you have 10 minutes right now?" Well, all of my annoyance melted away at that moment. I was like, of course I have 10 minutes for you. You saved a dog. I mean, you're the best person in America right now. And I'm a huge dog person. And I just realized, wait, I assumed and was seething and annoyed inside all day over this, when really they were doing something quite remarkable and wonderful. And you just don't know. That lesson is, you just don't know where they're coming from. If they don't respond to your emails, or they're not engaged in the level that you think they should be careful with the word should, but in the level they should be, you don't know that they're not working a couple of jobs. You don't know that they're not dealing with a family illness, or one of their other children is going through something. You just don't know. So just come to a situation with an open mind of, yeah, I'm open to hearing what's going on and how can I support you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned that there are those moments where parents can be challenging. Like there's just no way around it. It's a part of the job. What advice would you give to teachers in terms of their interactions with, you refer to them as the 10% that are tough, right? And I don't know if that's the term, but the tough 10, right? So what advice would you give for handling the more challenging parents and for dealing with sort of the conflict that comes about because of that?
Yeah, I do believe it's about 10%. You know, that's going to change year to year. But if you probably average it out, you're going to have 1 out of 10 that's going to be a little bit of a sticky situation or an unkind parent or caregiver, you know, an adult in their life. My advice is, one, listen. You know, you don't know what's going on in their life that's making them bring this personality or this behavior. There really could be something else going on. In the book, I have a few stories where I did learn there was something else going on and it was presenting as if they were kind of being a jerk to me, which really had nothing to do with me at all. Mm-hmm. And so just keeping that in mind, if it gets to be a level where you are becoming upset, it's becoming personal, they're using inappropriate language with you or inappropriate tone, then I hope that you work at a school where you have an administrator who will step in for you. Mm-hmm. And there is no shame at all for asking for help and telling an administrator, I have done everything I can with this family. I need you to intervene at this point. And mm-hmm. I have done that. I have asked an administrator to be present in a meeting or just take the meeting. And I really hope you work with somebody who could do that for you. Because the harder you push back or the more you take it personal, it's going to fuel that fire and it's going to make it worse. We want the best for the kid. Right. Mm-hmm. And let's hope the adults get along for the sake of the kid. But I, you know, this year I had a parent who got a little bit defensive when I told them about how their child was doing, and they did not respond in a way that I expected them to, and became a little bit attacking about my teaching. And it was really hard for me not to take that personally. But then I also have to realize, I just told them that their most important thing in their life, which is their child, mm-hmm. is really struggling in my class. That's got to hurt. Yeah. That's got to be hard to hear. I'm a parent. I know that would hurt. So I have to keep that in mind. And so ever since she became a little bit of attacking of me and my teaching, I backed off a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I realized the more that I tell her about how her child's doing, the more she's going to attack. So I'm just going to disengage a little bit. I'm going to focus on just working with the child, doing the best for her kid. And our relationship has gotten better, but I've actually decreased the level of communication that I've had with that parent, because you have to gauge, do I increase the level or do I decrease the level? Yeah. Where are we right now? Yeah.
And so if you think about making that decision, you know, decrease, increase, if we think about someone who's, say, a new teacher and they're just feeling overwhelmed and they're feeling defensive, what criteria or what thing would you look for that says, let's have more communication or let's have less?
Well, I think if you're new to the field, I think you should get advice, right? Mm-hmm. I think of a teacher I was working with. He was a 3 years teacher, so it's relatively mm-hmm. new. And he got an upset email from a parent about one homework assignment. It was such a minor issue in the scheme of life, right? Mm-hmm. He composed an email, did not send it, luckily. He composed an email and asked me to read it and said, what do you think?
Yeah.
It contained sentences with all caps to a parent. Like he was yelling at the parent. I said, whoa, let's pump the brakes on this one. Do not send that email. Mm-hmm. Let's take a pause here. So I'm so glad that he had the wisdom to ask advice before he hit send. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's okay to ask another teacher, a teacher who's been teaching a long time, a good colleague that you have. Say, here's the situation. Here's our history, the parent in my history. What do you think? You think I should give him a call? Do you think I should schedule a face-to-face? Should mm-hmm. I just kind of let it cool off for a week? Because sometimes that's what you need. You just back off for a little bit, let everybody cool off, come back in. And you learn that with time. It's a nuanced skill, but getting advice is what's really helped me.
So if we think about, you know, one of the things that's kind of coming across is this idea of it takes time. It's a skill that you develop. And a huge part of it is empathizing with parents, knowing where they're coming from. I would say, you know, demonstrating humility that comes across in the email. But at the same time, teachers do sometimes have to be careful that there are times where their humility or their vulnerability at times can get weaponized by a parental figure. So what advice would you give to teachers about that notion of being transparent, being humble, but being careful, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What does that look like?
I mean, that's a great question, because, you know, there are times that there's a parent who will take advantage of any weakness that they sense, mm-hmm. right? If you haven't been teaching a while, or maybe you've been teaching a long time, but you're new to that school. You just don't know how it works here. You know, I've been told that at a new school. You just don't know how, you don't know the way of things around here.
Yes.
So there are times that you do need to stand firm. You need to use a firm voice. I don't mean a yelling voice or a rude voice, anything like that. But there are times that you say, you know, I do know what I'm talking about here. And my experience, this is what I've seen. Mm-hmm. And if they are going to continue to argue with you, you have the right to end the conversation.
Yeah.
Another example, I have a great colleague, friend of mine, who was, you know, a little bit young. I think she was in her mid to early 20s. She looked young. And there was a parent who very inappropriately asked her point blank in a parent conference, how old are you?
Oof.
And she answered the question because she did not have the confidence to say, I don't think that's an appropriate question for you to ask me right now.
Yeah.
That is not unkind. It would not be unkind for her to say, that is not an appropriate question for you to ask me. Mm-hmm. I think the parent perhaps would appreciate the honesty and the firm stance. Maybe not, who knows, but it doesn't matter if they appreciate it. She needed to stand up for herself. So that's something she had to learn, unfortunately, the hard way, because she did answer his question. But just know that there are times, yes, you need to come across saying, I don't know everything. Let's partner together. Let's come up with a great solution for your child. But there are also times when you say, here's what I do know. And here's what my experience is. And I have degrees and, you know, all of these things that you have because you're a professional. So there are times that you just need to pull that out and say, here I am. You're not going to push me around.
Yeah, absolutely. So on this podcast, we talk a lot about creativity, student-centered learning, project-based learning, things like that. And so one of the things that has come up before is, you know, shifting our practice toward more student-centered approaches. And that includes things like changing the way that you do your classroom space, changing the way that you do assessment toward, you know, standard-based assessment, student self-assessment, peer assessment. And a lot of those changes, even if they benefit students, can feel different to parents. What advice would you give to teachers about introducing new classroom space or introducing, you know, I think for me, a lot of times it's project-based learning seems very different to parents. Project-based learning or a more flexible view of homework, any of those types of things that might seem to parents like, why are you teaching different than the way I was taught?
Yeah.
What advice would you give to teachers in terms of communicating with parents about more innovative approaches to teaching?
Yeah. So I went to Building Thinking Classrooms conference with Peter Liljedahl, and that same question came up in a symposium with him. And his answer was quite brilliant, I thought. He said, well, you don't ask parents permission. Is it okay for me to have your kids take notes and do quizzes and take traditional tests in this class?
Mm-hmm.
You just do it. Yeah. And so his thought was, you don't need to ask permission of families to do anything that you're doing in your classroom because it's research-based and it's based on learning and all this. So we assume in our heads that anything that's non-traditional needs to be explained. Yeah. Right. And it maybe doesn't need to be because we know it's research-based and it's backed. And so not coming across with the tone of, is it okay if, if we just do project-based and not traditional tests or something like that? So to be very careful with how you're delivering that information. But if there's something that parents are having, you know, more questions about, you're noticing a trend with the questions, because it is possible that parents may not notice, right? They may not notice that you're doing project-based because one, their kid is excited about your class, they're learning, they're loving what they're doing. So the parent's very happy with what you're doing. So maybe a message is not even necessary. But if you're getting a trend of questions, I'm a big fan of making a video. And so I'll give you an example. This year I took on a geometry class because we had a teacher who was out on medical leave. And so we had a couple of subs, and then finally it just landed, okay, Mrs. Frommert's going to be your teacher for the rest of the year. It's a more permanent situation. So that's new, right? That's a whole new thing. The parents definitely need to know that your child now has a brand new teacher, no more subs. And so I made a short video. And my video was introducing myself, explaining just a little bit about how my class works. It literally was 3 minutes long, and I put it on our learning management system and said, I welcome any of your questions that you might have. Please reach out to me. So that is a way that you can show your personality. You can show who you are. You're not having to make all those phone calls to explain. But you're also treating what you're doing in your classroom as this is normal. Right? Mm-hmm. Project-based learning or student-centered learning is not abnormal. It's very normal. Yeah. And it might look different than what you had in 1973, but it doesn't make it wrong or abnormal, right?
Absolutely. final question that I have is, you know, parental involvement is going to look different with different grade levels and subject levels. So, you know, I think about my own classroom teaching experience. It looked very different when I taught self-contained all subjects versus when I taught one subject. And then when I taught an elective, we'd have parent-teacher conferences and they would skip the electives, you know, and you'd be like, hey. And so I would do whatever I could to bring them in and say like, hey, just because we're an elective doesn't mean I don't want to hear from you. Like, let's connect. So I'm curious, what do you think is the difference in terms of grade levels and types of subjects that the teachers teach and what they should plan for and expect in terms of parental involvement?
Yeah, that's really important because I'm a middle school teacher as well. And so I'm teaching kids that are right on that cusp of, I'm not a little kid anymore, right? And, you know, I've never taught pre-K or kindergarten, so I can't, but I've been a parent of a pre-K kindergartner. And when my daughter was in pre-K, because again, it's a French and international school, she brought home this notebook called a cahier. That's French for notebook. And in the cahier every day was a little sentence or two about her day that the teacher wrote. And then that was really beautiful because then I could see just a little bit about how her day was. And then I could write in the cahier a little note like, oh, she's sleepy because she didn't, you know, go to bed early or whatever it was. It was just a nice, quick communication that wasn't email. So now that, you know, when she became older, she's in middle school and that's where I teach in middle school. I do talk to my students more than I talk to their parents, right? Unlike, you know, lower grades. So for example, if I have a student who's not focusing in class, he's being disruptive, talking too much, all the things that a middle schooler can do, I talk to them privately and I say, you know, here's what I need to see. Here's my expectations I have of the class for you to respect others and respect yourself. Do you need a grown-up at home to help you with this? No, ma'am. I do not. Nope. I got this. I will take care of it. Okay, cool. That's great. So I'm going to give you a couple of days. We'll see how this goes. And then I might have to get the help of a grown-up at home. Oh, you won't. You won't. Okay. So, and so the kid will go in. If he or she improves, no problem. I don't need to say a word to the family. If it continues, then I can say to the family, you know, John and I had a conversation. I asked him if he needs help at home. Clearly he does. Could you give him a reminder about this? And when I frame it like that, I think I get a lot of parent support. Mm-hmm. Now let's fast forward when the kid is 17, 18 years old. Again, a different can of worms there. You know, I think it's respectful of a student who's almost a grown adult to talk to them first, Have a conference with them present for sure, because this is their education. They're making choices about their future. And so I think student involvement increases heavily when they get into the teen years.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. That makes a lot of sense. Well, again, thank you so much for being part of this. I would love for you to share again, what is the title of your book and where can people find it?
Yeah. So it's called When Calling Parents Isn't Your Calling, A Teacher's Guide to Communicating with Parents. And lots of tips in there about conferences, meet the teacher night, phone calls, all the things. And you can find it on Amazon. You can also find me on Twitter at Mrs_Frommert, and that's Frommert. But if you just Google Crystal Frommert, you'll find me. There's not that many Frommerts out there.
That's so awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights with everyone.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks. So there we have it. That was Crystal Frommert. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I did. I loved her practical insights. As someone who works with pre-service teachers, I just found this to be really, really helpful. And I have enjoyed her book as well. I suggest that you go check it out, pick up the book. And thank you so much for listening. I just want to say, if you enjoy this podcast, would you consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever it is that you get this podcast? And don't forget to click the little subscribe button on whatever app you're using, and maybe tell a friend about this podcast as well. That would be awesome. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.